I have to confess, Tony, I've gotten you here under false pretenses. Your friends and I have been worried about you, and they're going to be here in a few minutes, and this is an intervention.
A Twitter intervention, yeah.
See, you knew the problem. And we're worried about you. You have been consumed and absorbed by Twitter, and we just want to try to help you.
I'm ready for the 12-step program. I actually tweeted the other day, "Hi, I'm Tony, and I'm a Twitter addict," and I really am. I've become addicted to it.
Well, now back up and tell me, when did you first start playing with Twitter, and why?
I first found out about Twitter during the election last year, and the folks, we had some technical folks at the Post-Dispatch who were trying to encourage us to do some new things, and our political team that was going to cover the political conventions decided they were going to do some Twittering from there. And I wasn't covering the conventions, but I wanted to go see what this thing was, and so I went to Twitter. I opened up a page, decided I would just start playing with it. And I actually played with it for the first time when Joe Biden was in Colombia. My very first tweet was when Joe Biden asked Senator Chuck Graham to stand up. And I had no followers at the time. I was just playing because I was covering the Biden event. And I was just sort of a backup that day because he was going to be in St. Louis. And so I wasn't writing the main story. And these political speeches on these little tours, they're repetitive and they're sort of the same thing. So I figured this is a good opportunity. I don't have to take copious notes. I'm going to look for little quips, little things that might fit in a Twitter. And indeed, Joe Biden said to Senator Chuck Graham, who of course is in a wheelchair, and Biden didn't know it, "Chuck, stand up, Chuck, stand up." And then he realized the mistake. Well, I Twittered that. And then I blogged it later, and some other folks did as well, and it became kind of a national, quick political story in no time at all. And it helped me realize how, in the nature of politics in particular, we talk about the 24-hour news cycle. I mean, it's a 60-second news cycle almost. Political coverage is changing because of the speed. And I realized very quickly that the reporters, as unfortunately we frequently are, were far behind the political consultants who were already realizing that this social networking stuff was important. And they were controlling the news cycle, not print product to print product, how we journalists were still thinking about it, but Twitter to Twitter and blog to blog, and they were so much faster than we were. And so I started to play with Twitter then. I played with it a little bit more through the election. And as I started to read about it and think about it and look at how other people were using it, I realized Twitter has a real application for the legislative coverage, because political junkies are, they're addicts. They want the news and they want it now. And I imagined a situation as I tried to think of Twitter as, all too often we do things as journalists because we see new technology being used and we say, we need to do that, but we don't really know why. And I was actually critical several months ago in a speech I gave at the university journalism school that we are not doing enough as journalists to talk about how do we use these new technologies for good journalism, as compared to, let's just do them, let's do video, let's do audio, let's do all these things.
Is what you're doing with Twitter journalism?
I think it is, and I think it's good journalism, and here's why. Our readers, our political readers, have an appetite for this. And they have an appetite for two things. They have an appetite for quick news, and they have an appetite for, I'm going to say three things actually, quick up-to-date news. They want to know it first, they want to know it now. They have an appetite for community, be they Democrats who want to hang with Democrats or Republicans who want to hang with Republicans or journalists who want to hang with journalists. And they have an appetite for personalities. And Twitter gives you all of those things, even more so than I think the blog does, because the communities build themselves naturally. There is a very natural process by which community is built in Twitter. And as I thought about this in the fall, I thought, Well, the legislative process is a perfect application for Twitter because things are happening so quickly, and they're happening in different parts of the Capitol. The House all of a sudden goes to deal with a bill that was on the calendar that some lobbyists didn't expect they were going to deal with it. I'm sitting there in the House, and I can Twitter, House just took up abortion coercion bill, which they might this week. And lobbyists or other politicians or other people in the building, other people affiliated with that bill, all of a sudden
How else would they know about that?
Well, they would know about it if they... There is a service called GovWatch that a lot of people
sure.
subscribe to,
and you get
notices when it comes up on the floor. But not everybody subscribes to that. Not everybody has
that.
That
doesn't
sort
do anything
of,
about committee stuff either.
It doesn't do that much about committee stuff. No, although they're starting to do that. But it's a similar philosophy. The philosophy is GovWatch actually made me start thinking about it because we subscribe to GovWatch, and I can get up to date text messages that says this House is in session, the Senate is in session. That kind of stuff is important in the Capitol. It's news now, immediately, and Twitter offers that. And so I started thinking, well, I'm in a legislative committee. Stuff is going on in the bill,
like the Ameren Huey.
Like the Ameren Huey. You know,
that was the closest to real time coverage of a committee. I mean, to my knowledge, I don't remember anybody doing real time. I mean, there's no way. I mean, they don't have an audio stream out of there. I don't know of any way to do it other than what you've been doing with some of those committees.
Right.
And it's like being there with you.
Well, and what happens in those committees is a couple of things. You talk about the Ameren bill. That's a huge interest bill. It's the bill this year. Well, every Ameren committee I've been to has been standing room only, packed, not enough room for everybody who wants to be in there. So I became the eyes and ears of people in the Capitol who wanted to be in that hearing, but
no other reporters are using Twitter in this way, as far as you know?
In the hearings, I haven't seen other people do it. But the politicians are.
Jolie Justice
is Twittering during committee hearings. Not as much as I am, because she's got to pay attention a little bit more. She's up and people are looking at her. Nobody's looking at me while I'm sitting there texting.
Does she get any pushback on something like that? I mean, the Senate's not supposed to have laptops in the chamber, right?
I haven't. If she's getting any, I don't know. But why would she? She's communicating to her fellow senators. She's communicating to her constituents.
I started following her as soon as you told me that she was Twittering, and it was a fascinating look at what was going on in there. I mean, she would say, "Wow, they're really hammering this guy."
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what that adds to my understanding of the hearing, but it's interesting.
And that's sort of the key. You know, what I found is, you know, the cynic says, okay, so you did 20 tweets during the committee hearing, and an hour later it's all gone. Who cares? Did anybody buy a newspaper because of that? Well, no, they didn't necessarily. But when you start to do that and you build followers on Twitter and you build a community on Twitter, people start to expect to follow you for political news in Missouri. And so you are doing what newspapers have done forever, building a franchise. I am building a franchise for up-to-date political news in Missouri that if you want to know what's going on as it's going on, at least those things that I'm covering, you go to @TonyMess at Twitter.
But are you building the Tony Messenger brand, or are you building the St. Louis Post-Dispatch brand? Or some combination?
Well, they're intertwined. I work for the Post-Dispatch, and I link on my Twitter posts frequently to the Post-Dispatch.
Absolutely.
I link to other people as well.
I have read stories on the Post-Dispatch website more since you started Twittering than I did ever before, just because I'm more immediately aware of it. Speaking of that, how do the grown-ups at the Post-Dispatch, I mean, to what extent are they aware of what you're doing, the significance of it? How supportive are they? Can you talk about that at all?
Yeah, sure I can. They're at least aware. They aren't always aware when I'm Twittering, but they're frequently aware. For instance, during the Lincoln days...
Twitter users?
Sure, oh, sure. Okay. A lot of Post-Dispatch editors and reporters are now on it, and many
Good.
Of them follow
I mean,
me,
you
and
think.
you can find them through my followers. But what they're starting to do now is when I'm covering a specific hearing, for instance, the Ameren hearing, they actually linked to my Twitter feed on the homepage. So good. Now we're cross-promoting. When I was Twittering from Lincoln days,
they did the same thing. Street and put that right on the sidebar. I mean.
Well, and they did that during the conventions.
Okay.
During the political conventions, before I was using Twitter, when we had our political team using it, we did that on the. If you went to the politics page, there was a whole feed of both Post-Dispatch Twitterers that were their professional reporters using it, and then also members of our community who we recruited, who we knew were going to the convention, and they were Twittering. So you could follow the journalists and the non-journalists sort of doing the same thing.
Now, one thing I haven't noticed is, and you're using hardware-wise, you have, what kind of phone? You said it's a...
It's a Sprint Mogul.
A Sprint Mogul phone.
It's the Sprint version of a BlackBerry.
Does it have a camera in it?
It's got a camera in it. It's got a video.
Have you done anything with TwitPic? Have you had occasion to take...
I haven't yet. And part of that is just because it's... The one difficulty of, as a journalist, deciding to take this step into a new area is you have to take the time to understand it and figure out what is the most effective use of your time. I have not yet, while plenty of other journalists have, started to do the video and the photos in addition, in part because where Twitter is an effective use of my time, similar to blogging, is I'm taking real-time notes. You check a lot of my Twitters, they're direct quotes. And so it's a strange process, but a lot of times my Twitter feed becomes my notes, and I transfer them to the notebook rather than the other way around. And so that's how, when other reporters ask me, how can you do this? We're taking notes, we're doing all these things. Well, I just take my notes on Twitter. If I'm doing an Ameren hearing, and then I go back and I print out my Twitter feed, and I've got my notes.
Okay, so
I haven't yet taken that step to doing the photo and the video while I'm doing that, because I'm just not sure it's how effective it's going to be compared to what I'm doing.
And your return on time investment isn't all that great. It's fun, it's cool, but better spent Twittering, frankly.
I think so.
Now you've been. A print journalist for a long time. You have now for, how you said, a year about, you've been Twittering.
Not even a year yet. 6 months.
Working within that 140 characters, have you noticed any difference or any effect on your writing at all?
I don't know that I could say that, but I do notice a difference in my thought process. And this has happened to me with blogging as well. And you know, Twittering is just a shorter form of blogging, and blogging is a shorter form of reporting. But what both of those sort of more immediate mediums do to a journalist is they force you to think in smaller sound bites. They force you to think, they force you to prioritize. And so what I do now, for instance, before I was Twittering as much as I am, during the gubernatorial debates last fall, I was live blogging the gubernatorial debates and filing 8 to 10 blog posts during an hour-long debate. And what that did is it forced me to focus on what's most important. And you run the risk of, while you're Twittering or while you're blogging a key item, that you might miss something else, and that's the potential downside. But the positive side, as it relates to prioritizing and thinking, is you think in your mind, this is important, this is something I should focus on, and that helps get your writing for the print already focused, because you've already thought in your mind, this is important, this is a key quote, I want to get it out there. The other thing that Twitter allows you to do is, before you've ever written the story, I now have a potential look at how readers are going to react. Not only what do I think is important, but what do readers think is important. When I'm Twittering in a hearing or on Senate debate or a speech at a political convention, as soon as it's out there, other people are retweeting it or responding to it.
Let me ask you about that. Are you ever concerned that you're tipping off, if there is such a thing as competition in this day and age, are you ever worried that somebody, some other reporter, is going to have some advantage that he wouldn't have or she wouldn't have otherwise had because you've told them something that's happening on Twitter?
I was when I first started doing this, and I think I've just gotten over it. we don't compete as journalists in the way we used to. And I'll give you an example. St. Louis Post-Dispatch readers are different than Kansas City Star readers. And we compete as journalists professionally. I don't like it. This weekend, one of my colleagues, Jason Noble, wrote a story on Nixon and how he's spending his budget dollars. It's a story I was working on, too. And he got it out there this weekend, and I hadn't gotten to it yet. And my initial journalistic, traditional, competitive reaction is, darn it, got beat on that one. Well, doesn't mean I can't do the story. You know, as a journalist, I'm ticked off about it. And some of the politicians might think, oh, gosh, Tony got beat on that. None of my readers care. They just want the information. We're no longer in this age, unfortunately, very sad day this week, Rocky Mountain News from my hometown, Denver, goes out of business. We're no longer in an age of two newspaper towns where the Rocky Mountain News and the Denver Post are competing, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and the Globe are competing. We're in an atmosphere of news and news now. And so when I Twitter, I know that some of the radio stations in St. Louis follow my Twitter. I know that the Beacon follows my Twitter. I know that all these people are out there following my Twitter. When I was at Lincoln Days, Dave Cantonese from KY3 in Springfield and myself are both in the same meeting, Twittering the same sorts of things.
I felt like I was there with you. I mean,
and so there is a twinge of that competitive spirit as a journalist that occasionally makes me think, gosh, I'm afraid somebody else might get this first, but they didn't get it first because I Twittered it.
I mean, you know, if they're getting it from me, they're getting it from me.
And so that's where, you know, building that brand becomes just as important as, okay, somebody might get their noon radio report out before. And, you know, the reality is, do the readers know where they got the information first? And if they do, then they'll come back to me. And if they're coming back to me, they're coming back to the Post-Dispatch. And someday, people that make a lot more money than me will figure out how to make money off of that.
Well, I don't know that it's so much a matter of making money, but I would say you are already creating value, and you've talked about several things in the last few minutes. Creating value for your readers, creating value for the newspaper that pays you. So, I mean, if you're looking for a way to, like, dollar for dollar, I think that's going to be hard to do. But there's no question I'm certainly more aware of what the St. Louis Post-Dispatch is doing in terms of legislative coverage because I follow your Twitter feed. I want to ask you about the Capitol Press Corps. I mean, I know that's sort of a secret society. That's the way I sort of think.
I can't teach you the handshake.
I don't want to know the handshake or the secret word or whatever. But I hesitate to even call it new media because it doesn't feel new to me anymore. But some of the things you've been talking about, Twitter, blogging, I mean, do you get a sense of how the people who do what you do at the Capitol are using or thinking about or feel about any of this technology?
I get a sense that the Capitol Press Corps and Capitol Press Corps in general will be dragged along to new technology kicking and screaming.
Okay.
I'm the only member of the... Well, I take that back. Steve Walsh from MissouriNet is Twittering. Although I don't think he does it as frequently as I do, but
at gunpoint,
I'm the only person that I know of in the Jeff City Capitol Bureau, other than our Post-Dispatch intern, who's now Twittering as well, that I view that now as part of my integrated day. It's part of my reporting. It's part of what I do, and I consider it an important part of what I do as a reporter. I don't know that applies to the rest of the Capitol Press Corps. And I think part of that is they view the traditional role of Capitol Press Corps as watchdog. You know, they're used to doing these longer, more thoughtful pieces about how to explain how this, this federal stimulus is going to work in a 50-inch story or so.
An important function, no doubt.
And it's a very important function of what we do, and it's something that I do as well. But the fact is, I'm not given that kind of space like I used to be to do those sorts of pieces. And so part of what I have to do as a journalist is make sure that we still have a community that's following our journalism. And Twitter helps create that community. And maybe it's a different community than it used to be. Not everybody who follows my Twitter feed is from St. Louis. Some of them are from Columbia. They're from Jeff City. They're from Washington, D.C. They're from all over the place.
Is there a common thread through your growing number of followers? I mean, is there a...
For the most part, I mean, the primary thread in my followers is politics. Most of the people that follow my Twitter feed are either politicians or political employees or people that are interested in politics. But then it spreads out into other communities of interest. I have people that follow me because they're interested in St. Louis. I have people that follow me that are interested in Columbia. I have people that follow me that are interested in journalism. And each of those people sort of spreads out their network, and it reminds me of the old... is it the old Double Mint commercial? They'll tell two friends, and they'll tell two friends, and they'll tell two friends, and that's what Twitter is, and in real time with real people. And here's the thing that really interests me about Twitter that I didn't expect. One of the things that journalists are incredibly annoyed about as it relates to the blogging world is the low level of discussion that takes place on blogs. You have all of these anonymous people that just throw bombs back and forth at each other.
There's some of that.
They're blind partisans, and they're anonymous, and they don't use their real names. And if you look at the blogging discussion on most political blogs, it's really low level. Twitter, in my opinion, from what I've seen so far, has a higher level of discussion than what you see in the blogs.
Is it because it's hard to rant in 140 characters?
I think that's part of it. I think that's because the concept is to build a community, and so most people on Twitter are either using their real names, or if they aren't using their real names, you know who they are. They may use mine is at Tony Mess. People know it's Tony Messenger, and you go to my page and you see that I work for the Post-Dispatch, etc. There are very few people in the political world who are using Twitter or following other Twitterers who are doing so totally anonymously, because it gets the concept is to sort of build a community. And so the level of discussion on Twitter is at a higher level. Perfect example, there's still partisanship. The folks, and I feel like it's happening on my page, but it's happening on pages all over the place. The folks who are following Claire McCaskill's Twitters and Roy Blunt's Twitters, the Democrats have been making a big deal out of how great Claire is in terms of her posts are very real. You get a sense of her. You know what she's doing. She's been one of the most effective Twitterers of a politician
in the
nation.
She's got a lot of ink on it, too.
Absolutely, got a lot of ink on it. Roy Blunt's doing it now. Roy Blunt's haven't quite been the personality yet that Claire's have been.
Do you know if Roy Blunt is actually right?
I don't know. And see, that's the whole thing. I know Claire's actually doing her Twitters, or at least...
Now, I'll tell you this.
I don't know that Roy is, but here's where the debate is. There was an actual debate that was taking place between a bunch of Twitterers that I follow, so it was all back and forth, over whether or not the politicians who are Twittering should also follow people.
I saw that, yeah.
And some of it was very partisan, but it was partisan with people that were using their names. And there was an actual argument and discussion about whether or not politicians who are Twittering should actually follow people. Now, people who aren't into politics and aren't into Twitter will think, oh my gosh, that's inane. Who cares? But the point is, there was a partisan political discussion that never would have taken place on the blog in the same way.